The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lynn Cannell Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee.
Talk Around Town is supported in part by Community Waste Solutions, offering comprehensive refuse services for the community of Haines, with curbside pickup to South Hall, composting to recycling, C&D disposal to septic and porta potty services. Community Waste Solutions at the end of FAA Road in Haines, open 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday.
Welcome to Talk Around Town. I'm Margaret Friednauer, your guide through today's talk about things that matter to us here in Haines. Stay tuned for our current news analysis with Tom Morfitt. Today we'll be talking about the upcoming budget process for the Haines Borough in an interview with Borough Manager Mark Ernest and Mayor Stephanie Scott. And we'll be checking in with community education, the Chilkoot Tribal Youth Program, and the new education coordinator at the library. This is Talk Around Town. Thanks for joining us. Here listening to Talk Around Town this morning on KHNS. I'm Margaret Friednauer in for Deborah Schnabel this week. And with me to start off the show, as always, is Chilkat Valley News editor Tom Morfitt.
Good morning, Margaret.
Morning, Tom. So you mentioned something we were talking about what we were going to talk about this morning. And you wanted to start off with something light for a change, but something noteworthy about the community calendar.
Yes, I first want to say I think it's spring because basketball is over.
All over? Nothing?
Gold
no
medal,
more.
The little kids yeah. thing. I think so. That is kind of how we mark the junior high basketball tournament in Juneau. So this is officially spring when the basketball season ends.
Oh, that's nice to hear you declare it.
I pontificate like the new pope. I did want to put a plug in that the community calendar is back as an old fogey. This brings real warmth to my heart. Remember, the community calendar was published for like 55 years. It has people's birthdays, anniversaries on it. You guys have broadcast typically during the day who's whatever's on there for the day.
Right.
It went away for a year, and the story was that it was no longer used, that people weren't interested in paper calendar because it's all on their iPhone or it's all on their Facebook, so you don't need actually something on your wall that tells you what day it is. But the Venture Scouts have decided to bring it back and to resurrect it, and they need to know your birthday or anniversary by Sunday. And
by also this Sunday, okay.
By this Sunday. You call Kim Larson at 766-3885. And and it's going to be run from June through May. So
okay.
it's kind of a little different calendar. It's kind of a school year calendar.
Oh, fun.
And
you get to know everybody's birthday so you can
yes.
wish them happy right there.
Yes.
That part, I got to admit, cracks me up.
But. And it's one of those great – I think it's a real community building thing.
Yeah.
You know, you get to know a little bit about your neighbors. And as a fogey, I love it because I think each generation says – you know, it invents – says, no, all that old stuff is gone. So us fogies really relish when old stuff actually sticks around. It says, no, you're wrong. There is a place for calendars, and I particularly like the birthday calendar.
Well, I'm a fan of anything that warms your heart, Tom, because it makes us all a little happier.
My cold, cold heart.
Well, and now on things on a little more serious note, because there is some serious news going on in the community.
Yeah, yeah.
And you want to talk about the fact that we do have, unfortunately, a police chief on administrative leave.
Yeah, so. That was the big news this week, that the borough put the chief on administrative leave. after a month of having a complaint against him from within the force, we...
And just to be... I mean, because I was at the meeting, too. I mean, from what we understood from the meeting is that it was because of the performance evaluation from the manager was the official reason and things that stem from that performance evaluation that the chief was put on administrative leave, at least technically.
Right.
But it does follow a bunch of other things that have happened.
Yeah, the evaluation basically was made because there was a complaint and the management, which hadn't previously evaluated the chief. It's kind of notable that the borough claims that the chief's evaluation is a confidential document.
Right.
The state Supreme Court has ruled that positions as low, as far down the chain as librarian are public documents. This was a case that Chilkat Valley News argued before the school board, unofficially, 2 years ago. The evaluations, not of the rank and file, not of the guy who sweeps the halls, but of high-level public employees who have discretion, certain amount of discretion, authority, and supervision, or supervise other people, their evaluations are public, according to the state Supreme Court. And we have, you and I, have gotten those documents in the past of the manager and of the school superintendent. So,
And the individual themselves can always... release that information too without getting into larger legal arguments.
Sure.
You can and in fact that's kind of what happened at the last assembly meeting and the last few meetings is that the chief who some of these discussions could have technically happened in an executive session, he has said he would like them to happen in public. And so the assembly has to sit there and discuss a lot of this personnel stuff in public.
Yeah, I was hoping to talk about that on the show. We've known of the complaint. We reported the complaint a month ago now, actually a month exactly, and the manager has had the complaint longer than that. Two reasons why people say at the Tom Morfitt special meeting 2 weeks ago, people stood up and said, "I don't have any details," and I think the public still is kind of in the dark about what the nature of the issues with the chief are. And there's two really prominent reasons why that is so, or maybe three, but one of them is that the Chief Lowe has said to the assembly, "Talk about me," and in 99 out of 1,000 cases, when a person's evaluation or job performance is to be discussed, they say, "Yes, well, let's go and talk about an executive session." The chief has kind of forced the assembly's hand a little bit and saying, "No, let me, I want to hear it out in public."
Right.
The assembly apparently does not understand the rules of engagement or libel law to know, geez, what can we say?
Right.
And, it's my understanding he's a high-ranking public figure, almost impossible to libel. The complaint and his valuation is a matter of high public importance. And I think they're absolutely safe. I'm not a legal expert, but you and I, as journalists, study this stuff.
Right.
But now this week, they've gone to their attorney to say, "What can we say?"
Right.
Because twice, to a certain extent, the chief has stymied discussion by saying, "Let's have it in public." And the assembly apparently doesn't know what they can say.
And the way the rule works is, obviously this could fall into executive session. The assembly wanted to go into executive session. But if they're talking about a specific person and that person requests that the discussion remain public, then they have to abide
by
state law.
By state opinion.
And like some of the assembly members said, it's completely – for them it was uncharted territory. They've never discussed a personnel review in public because it usually goes into executive session. So,
And I think it speaks volumes about the process. That so often, I think, particularly in small towns where maybe your attorney isn't sitting at your right hand, it's so easy for elected leaders to close the doors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much easier to talk freely.
It is. It is for them.
Sure.
Understandable. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other – one of the other reasons, I think there's some confusion here is that under our form of government, under our borough laws, the manager supervises the chief, But the assembly hires and fires the chief. So the information has to come through the assembly. Now, the party that brought the complaint has now taken the complaint directly to the assembly.
Mm-hmm.
So the assembly has all that information, and they don't, and they should have the information of an inquiry that Mark Ernest also conducted.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess after they speak to the attorney, the assembly, I believe, should be able to come to some resolution of this thing, or I think we could reasonably expect them to.
Right. Well, it is interesting. The borough does not have a human resources department, is what you find out during this whole process. There isn't, you know, the manager has to act as a human resources director for certain people, and then the assembly has certain powers over some of the positions
right.
to hire and fire. So
yeah. It is
confusing.
Right. I'll put a little bit of explanation towards that, is that the manager is a personnel director.
Right.
And the reason that is that in our old form of government we had here before we had consolidation, we had a strong mayor form of government. And under the traditional strong model, the mayor does all the hiring and firing. But historically what happened was that you wound up, maybe not so much in Haines, but in other places with, you know, corrupt or inept public employees because they all work for an elected guy. You hire a manager because the performance of the staff is going to be a reflection of them. And the manager then supervises and hires and fires a lot of people below. The exception with that system under a manager form of government is those four top positions, the clerk, the chief fiscal officer, the chief of police, and the attorney are hired directly by the assembly. But the assembly doesn't supervise.
Right.
They just get to hire and fire. So it might be something that the assembly wants to address in code.
Right.
And say, or at least look at.
Well, it is a confusing situation. It's ongoing. You and I are both continuing to cover it. We are dealing with individuals as well as positions in the borough, so it is sensitive. And hopefully
yeah.
it'll get resolved in some fashion that everybody can live.
Yeah,
you know.
And I guess I'd like to say just to our readers and your listeners, the reason that we keep covering this is that what we know about the evaluation, of the issues that have been brought forward is that they're serious and they extend to more than one employee, or they're from more than one employee within the department. We can't really say more than that right now, but we do have some information about the complaint.
Okay. Well, thanks, Tom. I hope you continue to find things that warm your heart this week, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Margaret.
Talk to you later. Right, and now we're here with John Hagen, Community Education Director for Haines. I kind of have a trifecta on the show today of education programs in the community, because we're going to talk about what all these different programs do briefly and what kind of things they have coming up in each of their programs. So first, John, Community Education, hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm quite well.
So, community education, this has been your first year in the position, and you had quite a few educational opportunities, open gym, all sorts of fun stuff. You were kind of talking recently about, do you want to give us an update on the program and then maybe what you're looking to do in the coming year, next year?
Yeah. A lot of the programming that we had this year has been legacy programs. There have been classes that have been popular in the past, and such as basic digital photo class taught by a Ron Horton, an area photographer, and then a rolling series of carving classes taught by Jim Heaton, an area carver.
Right.
And also something like a sushi class, which is a one-day class.
That was popular.
That is a very popular class. But all these classes are classes that they've been popular in the past, and they're classes that people know about because they've taken them before, and they look for them year after year. One of the things I'm looking to grow the program with is, in a way, build it build out a larger schedule of events or classes for next year.
And just to remind, you did try some new classes this year, right? I remember you tried the financial fitness class.
Yeah.
And you were able to use Skype with that or something.
Yeah. I was able to team up with a credit union up in Anchorage that had a financial fitness class that they offer their community members. But because we don't have a branch of that credit union in town, they were able to get their educator to give a financial fitness course online, and we did it over Skype. We set up this computer in the classroom, and it was a way of having a little less hardware intensive teleconference class.
Okay, and you did the marine education course.
Yeah, we also had invited the and folks with the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association up to teach. We got them up to go through some marine safety courses. They did some man overboard work, as well as boat safety drills. Unfortunately, we weren't able to use the pool at the time because it was closed for repairs. So we're actually going to have in the next month or so, we'll be having a follow-up class where there'll be a pool session involved.
Oh, okay. So how did the first year of being community ed director want you to maybe try new things next year?
In some ways, there's a lot of things happening in the community education class, and by being the first year of my walking in at the very beginning of the year, I didn't really have any time to build on anything except the knowledge of the former community ed director. So I didn't know how much effort to put forth and
what the possibilities were.
Exactly. there's a lot of possibilities in that place. In a way, the community ed position, it's a blank canvas. There's you're really relying on community members to help teach community members,
and that's what you're hoping to bring in maybe next year more.
And that is what I'm hoping to bring in next month.
Okay.
I'm definitely open for looking to have a bring in as many classes as I can. I have a lot of classroom space to fill up, and a lot of facilities available for people that are looking to teach classes or take classes.
And what kind? I mean, I think people maybe get, what kind of classes are you looking for? Do you have a wide, there are other agencies in town that offer educational opportunities like the library and things like that. So how are you kind of different, or what kind of difference can you offer, students or people that want to teach classes?
Well, I offer a little bit more of a broader format. It's I definitely opened a much more general classes like digital photography, a class I've, or even more specific classes, a class I've keep batting around teaching is sports photography. That's like a weekend seminar to help folks, especially at the, I think I might be doing, that's something I'll be teaching next year as sports season or basketball season, as Tom mentioned, ramps up, is a little sports photography class to help folks who want to take pictures of their participants in the sports get better images out of those.
Okay.
And I guess we differentiate ourselves in the fact that I facilitate the space for people to teach classes. I'm not working with a cohesive grant or something like that.
So you are looking for ideas.
I am definitely looking for ideas. If you have a class you want to teach, like fly tying or even beading or something as more intensive as cedar hat building, cedar mm-hmm. basket weaving, or weaving courses. I'm looking to have classes that might just be a one evening class or a one weekend day class.
So not like a 6 week long thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm definitely open for those too. Like
okay.
Our classes like pottery definitely fit that, or a woodworking class, which one that we have starting next week, that'll take the take it to the right at the end of the school year.
And I know some community members took advantage of the other aspect of your job a little bit, is the facilities that you have available for people to use. Not just, I mean, a lot of people think of your position is just open gym, which yeah. I know is important to the community. So,
you know, that's definitely a very popular program, the open gym classes that we started with volleyball and basketball. And then we even grew it to the fact that there was a group that wanted to have open gym soccer. So we were able to get those guys in the gym to kick a ball around until the track dries up enough for them to actually play soccer outside.
Oh, okay.
And we even had like a group of parents that when it was really cold and really nasty out, they didn't want their toddlers. It was probably too dangerous to have their toddlers playing outside.
And cold.
And they rented a gym space to let their kids romp around. And that's actually something that for next year, I'm probably going to end up, that I'll be formalizing that as a sort of an open gym geared towards younger folks, just to, let them romp around in the gym.
Gotcha. So what do you, you do take the hiatus for the summer when the school is out of session. What do you have left for this season? And then what do you want people to do to get in contact you with ideas for next year?
Well, what I have for this season, I have next week I actually have three classes that are going to be starting up. And one is a 4-week basic digital photo class. It happens on, that'll be happening on every, each Wednesday for 4 weeks. Then I'll have a woodworking class where folks can use the school facilities to and school our shop teacher to teach various aspects of a project. They come in with a project idea, or Darwin will help them teach that project or figure out a project to do. And then I have the last of our Northwest Coast carving series where Jim Heaton will be teaching a panel carving class, which is really the basic project where you get to first play around with carving wood. So that one's a class suitable for people that are just curious about carving.
Okay. So how do people reach you if they have ideas or questions? Or
I would love to hear people's ideas for classes if there's something they want me to have, or if they have a class that they want to teach, whatever that might be. You can get a hold of me at communityed@hbsd.net or my number at 766-6727. My office hours are in the evening.
All right. Thanks, John. John cool. Hagan, Community Education Director. Anything else?
No.
No,
thank
you're
you
good.
Very much, Margaret.
You're welcome. Another kind of educational community program that we have going on, Jake Bell, and he's with, I have it written down, Jake, I swear I do. Just give it to me. Chilkoot Tribal Youth Program, right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Now, I am fascinated by this program. Is it new, or is it something that you are new to?
This is an ongoing program from Chilkoot Indian Association, and it's actually been a 5-year grant, and this is the final year. We're going to work on trying to extend that as long as possible. But it has been in operation. Rod Hinson was a former manager, and
oh, right.
He had a lot of neat, interesting programs with the kids. Worked on the cleanup of the cemetery out by the airport. Had archery classes and other public safety classes that were really informative and helpful for the youth. And the program itself kind of has a very broad motive, which is to sort of prevent, I guess you'd say, maladaptive behaviors like drug and alcohol use through the promotion of cultural activities. And so there's a lot of opportunity for getting kids outside and interested in traditional cultural values and activities that are an alternative to, you know, getting involved and mixed up in any kind of dangerous options.
Well, I know you've been busy. I've heard about some of the activities you guys have been up to. What have you been doing so far since you've been in the position?
So I came on in January, and I started out by trying to get in the schools and familiarize myself to the kids and have them know who I was once I started offering different activities. And we started out with some traditional food cooking classes. And so we were doing that once a week. We got a bunch of salmon from last year, and we were trying to talk about different ways to cook those up, traditional ways, and also kind of more modern ways to use a local resource. Since then, I developed a little curriculum for middle schoolers, and we had 4 middle schoolers sign up for that curriculum through this month of March. And we've been touching on many aspects of traditional culture. We've been involved in some local seal hunting that occurred, and so
I think I heard about this one.
Yeah, and so we've been kind of syncing up with some of those activities, and from that, learning the processing and of seal and rendering seal oil and tanning a seal hide. So we're kind of start to finish trying to introduce these kids to traditional culture. Tlingit language has been a part of that. Just kind of touching on all these different aspects, because in some instances, even for kids who have traditional Tlingit heritage, they don't necessarily, haven't come into contact with some of those things. So really, I'm trying to just facilitate their introduction to some of these wealth of resources we have in this community.
And have you been working with like community members that you use to kind of bring this to the kids in a way, or facilitate, like you
Yes,
said?
Yes, exactly. Okay. I mean, I only see myself as a facilitator, because okay. I don't have any of those traditional values, really, in the sense that I'm not Tlingit, but I'm working to identify those cultural resources in the community, and there's a lot. I mean, there are master artisans and master storytellers and people obviously fluent in Tlingit language, and so just trying to connect the pieces and get kids introduced, both tribal and non-tribal youth, to understand what kind of cultural wealth we have in this community.
So non-tribal youth is invited to and
yes.
welcome to join you guys.
Our program is open to everyone. And
oh, wonderful.
Some of our future projects will hopefully be a little more open. I've kind of been working through channels in the school, but come springtime and summer, we're going to try and have more open, longer-term projects. We're going to try and render some hooligan oil. We're going to try and do a fish smoking and drying camp for kids, and so I'll be advertising that, trying to work in conjunction with other organizations, with the library, and so that'll hopefully be on people's calendars, and they'll see it, and yes, everyone is invited.
How do the kids respond to it? Do they dig getting into the rendering? And I know you've done some work with the seals, like with Wayne Price and stuff.
Yeah, I think the kids so far, even though it may be new to them, I haven't seen anyone really turn away or walk away from activity. They've been pretty willing to jump in. I think they still have that kind of youthful fascination intact.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's good. Some of the interesting things I've seen is just kind of them wrapping their heads around this alternative idea of resources and how they're used. And for instance, with some of these traditional resources with the seal, for instance, them being interested in a monetary value for different aspects of the activity. You know, they always want to know how much is this worth? How much does this cost? And really trying to explain to them and wrap their heads around the idea of a resource not being necessarily for monetary gain, more for sharing with other members of your community, for using yourself as food, that kind of wealth, cultural wealth that is kind of hard to understand if you haven't been as exposed to it. So,
have you had a lot of good response from community members you want to link up with, or like in the schools and things like that? Or are you still looking for some of those connections too?
I'm certainly looking for people who are interested and willing to, if you have a skill that you'd like to share with kids, I'm, like I said, as a facilitator, please get in contact with me. I'm at the Chilkoot Indian Association offices, which is 766-2323. And yes, I'd be grateful for people to volunteer, we have ways to compensate you for your time, but just to connect with kids and offer their knowledge and experience, because I feel like there are opportunities in this town that kids are missing to learn from adults and all the special knowledge and skills that come from living here and a cultural history here. So
yeah, there's lots of it. Well, I'm glad you sound like you enjoy and embrace the job that you're in. So it's nice to have someone that makes those connections for us. Thanks, Jake.
Yeah, and please check us out on Facebook. It's Chilkoot Tribal Youth Program. And I've been posting a lot of media there, pictures of what we've been up to, and I'll be using that as a way to kind of roll out any future projects so people know what's going on.
I was going to ask you, too, if there are kids who want to get involved, they can contact you, too, to find out what's going on, and I'm sure you get the word out as
yes.
well. So, okay. Well, thanks, Jake Bell with the Chilkoot Tribal Youth Program. Thanks for letting us know about it today.
Thank you, Margaret.
Okay, take care. Listening to Talk Around Town on KHNS. I'm your host, Margaret Friednauer, today. We've been talking to some of the directors of different community education programs in town. Next up, I'm bringing you an interview we did about last week about the budget process, and that's coming up. Budget's going to be released April 1st, and I'll bring you that interview in just a moment. Thanks for joining us today. Haynesboro budget for fiscal year 2014 will be released Monday. Haynesboro manager Mark Ernest has suggested residents should be prepared to see some changes in the budget in light of an expected shortfall from federal and state funding sources of nearly $500,000. But the manager, Mayor Stephanie Scott, and Executive Assistant Darcy Kobach are wanting the community to get creative and get used to thinking differently when it comes to borough funding and budgets for the foreseeable future. They sat down for a discussion about budget and funding issues recently. We started the discussion off with Mayor Scott's assessment of how she hopes the community can reframe its thinking about borough funding and services. She said many communities have become accustomed to federal and state funding from sources that don't usually even relate to the local economy. She uses the example of oil tax money. Haynes does not produce oil, but benefits from its production elsewhere in the state. On the other hand, the borough does capture money from fish tax processed in the borough.
So, you know, for instance, I think of that as a local, something that we can control. I mean, we could try to provide for more fish processing activity in the borough, and we would benefit from an activity that is within our historic activity. It's something that we all do one way or the other, and we're going to become increasingly more having to rely increasingly more on what we do in order to have money. And it kind of reminds me, we're not going to get back to this, but there's a story that the museum is aware of a time in town here when there was $10 cash floating around. That's it. But nobody went hungry because people were able to do what they needed to do in order to sustain themselves. And we're going to need to be doing more of that, growing our own food, providing our own fuel. So, you know, how can we do that? To me, when I say local economics, that's what I'm thinking about.
The borough over the last 3 years has averaged about $150,000 a year from the fish tax, and the mayor uses that as an example of what she considers local economics. The trend of dwindling federal and state funding is the motivator, the mayor said, for wanting to be more self-sustaining as a community. But those that know Mayor Scott know that her politics are often melded with her philosophical view of the world. And in this case, she said she believes a self-sustaining community has other benefits besides just economics.
Philosophically, I am much, you know, I am more inclined to want to be self-sustaining, acknowledging all the while that we are not an island, that we have many supports that come in from places that we have no connection to. It's amazing. But as the reason I came to Haines myself back, you know, 40 some years ago was because it was most like the Northeast Kingdom where we're from in Vermont, and we felt that we knew how to subsist here. If everything went to pieces, we would know how to feed ourselves on this land, how to keep ourselves warm. We're carpenters. I'm a farmer, you know, and I'm not a survivalist, but I do think that we've gotten far, far, far too distant from providing for ourselves through our own blood, sweat, and tears. And that Haines has a deep culture of people who did and do provide for themselves. Look at our native community. You know, we can all benefit from these outside resources. But I don't think, I think we need to learn how to do without, and we need to have some pride in our ability to do without. I'm not like the governor who says, I don't want any federal funds. I'm not going to say that. But I do think we should have pride in our capacity to take care of ourselves. But we need to develop that. We need to redevelop those systems.
But Borough Manager Mark Ernest is a numbers person. He is responsible, along with Chief Fiscal Officer Gila Stewart, to bring a budget to the Assembly each year. He offers examples of things the borough has tried to do already to save real dollars in light of dwindling federal and state revenue.
It's like many other issues that we have to deal with. In my view, we have to look high and low and do everything we can as a community to follow the guidance, and I think it's excellent, and it needs to be done. That the mayor outlined, and I think a real life example of that process and my growth and understanding of why that's so important is the promotion of converting from the halogen lights over to LEDs for the street lamps. And when you look at the life cycle of that conversion alone, it adds up, and we have to be looking at everything that we possibly can to stretch the dollars as far as they can so as to minimize the impacts that are inevitable.
Here's a little primer. The general fund is split into two funds, the town site and the area wide. The town site budget is just under $2 million and covers things like police service and road maintenance. The area-wide budget is about $4 million and covers the school, library, museum, general government operations, and public facilities. Both funds have a reserve of about $2 million. But the upcoming expected cuts in funding that go into those two accounts is what is concerning, Ernest says.
The real concern, though, that we're seeing in cuts that we are already aware of and cuts that we believe will be coming for this upcoming fiscal year, we're looking at about $500,000 out of three funding sources. So we know that Secure Rural Schools will be reduced by about $280,000. We believe that the supplemental state revenue sharing will not be forthcoming. That could change. Depends on the legislature, but that amounts to about $170,000 for a total of $450,000. And then when you add the 10% reduction because of sequestration for payment in lieu of taxes, we're pushing $500,000. And that's all all out of the area-wide fund, which is the fund that pays for the school district. It pays for a lot of the other services that we all, believe are important. But these are real numbers, and there will be real impacts to this.
That's where looking for new revenue sources comes into play, the manager says. A wide range of ideas for economic development should be on the table for discussion, Ernest says.
We have to look at every option, in my opinion. Some, after evaluation, will be determined to be not applicable, not suitable, not practical, or not supported by the community, and we can eliminate those, but we do need to at least consider them. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're attempting to do here. Darcy's been working hard along with myself and the mayor and staff to try to bring ideas into the community discussion. Everybody is aware by now that, you know, there are some opportunities that may come forth from the Yukon. In maybe in both directions, with transportation north and products heading south. We don't know how that's all going to shape up, but you know, there are some areas that we need to be thinking about if we want to maintain the quality of life that we have. The reason why people live in Haines, because of, not only because of the beauty, but also because of the services and facilities that we have here. And it's important. If we want to attract people, they have to have a way to make keep our people here. There has to be employment opportunities, and to support a family. We're concerned about enrollment at the school, you know. So somehow the community, we need to figure out a way to not just look at this upcoming budget year, but look 5 years down the road, at 20 years down the road, and decide what kind of a community do we want to be.
But what still looms in the near future is next year's budget. Mayor Scott said she hopes not to lose any services, yet the borough needs to find efficiencies in service delivery. And she says that could mean government jobs are affected.
I think that what we might need to do is to find efficiencies in our current service delivery methods. However, what that might mean is that we might lose a couple of jobs, and that would be an impact to the community. I think of when the government is able to become more efficient and thus displace an employee, and our employee expenses are very expensive. But it's the people that make the programs work, so they're extremely valuable. But when I think of a government job being eliminated, I can't help but think of it as sort of a death, just like when anybody dies in this community. Everybody knows somebody who knows somebody, and there's an impact. So I think if I had a crystal ball, I think that might be the level of impact that we might be seeing in the short term.
Ernest agrees that for the next budget, any pain of budget cuts will likely be felt in the area of personnel first.
Any significant reduction of our budget expenditures are going to be in the personnel area. Of course, we could reduce, as much of the non-personnel costs as possible, but we can't stop buying fuel. We can't stop paying for the electric bill. We have service agreements. We have a number of things that we just can't eliminate or significantly reduce. And I think that over the years, the borough staff has done a very good job, because we have had tight years and we've had to make reductions all along the way, at least since I've been here, of really finding those areas that can be cut without impacting services. But beyond this, to make any significant impact on the expenditure side of the equation, we're talking about people, and we're talking about services, and not necessarily to eliminate them, but that maybe some services are, we take a hiatus. There's a 3-month gap, you know, but then the question is, what do you do? How do those employees span that gap? If we were to close some operation for the summer or some operation for the winter, you know, how do we bridge, or what do those people do if we want mm-hmm. to keep them mm-hmm. in employed, to keep them in the community? So I think it's easy or tempting for suggestions to just say, well, let's cut, you know, X, close it down for the winter, but that creates a whole new set of challenges and a new set of problems, but we mm-hmm. have to be able to figure out how to navigate and go through that.
At this point, you may be thinking those $2 million fund balances look tempting, but like most people know, and Ernest reiterates, it's not always best practice to spend down your savings.
We do have a fund balance. It's one that I want to try to avoid as much as possible, and build the budget based on revenues to the extent that we can. However, you know, there are situations where you can fill the gaps if you believe that it's a short term, or to step down instead of a, you know, let's just say a 20% reduction in 1 year. Maybe you break it into a couple of years, spread the pain out over a couple of years until things can turn around.
And just slashing services could have what Ernest calls a cascading effect on efforts to bolster a local economy.
I think we really need to keep in mind, and somebody who suggested, you know, to me recently, the need to be careful about cutting out services that we have here, and maybe that's those services are reasons again why people move here and why people stay here, and without those families, our school goes down. It's a cascading effect when our population starts to decline. You know, we still have to provide services. Those services don't go away. You know, we still have to have a same level of police officers. We have to have, unless we go back to a, you know, really an emergency situation, we still have to have dispatch. We still have to process all of the grant forms that come in, and, you know, there's still programs that continue, but we won't have the revenue from property tax or sales tax or state revenue sharing, things like that.
Mayor Scott noted it's interesting to look at the most expensive services, the borough funds, because they are often the most popular or supported services as well. For example, the mayor says the most expensive service for the borough is the school. But the mayor also emphasizes the borough funds the school at a higher level than required by the state. But executive assistant to the manager, Darcy Kobeck, says the school attracts families to stay and new families to come to Haines, in turn bolstering the economy. So school funding or reducing school funding can be a catch-22, Kobeck says.
I would add to what Mark was getting at, you know, I'm kind of promoting this location-neutral economy, and we haven't done the studies. I've been doing casual surveys myself, but I would argue that the majority of people moving to Haines move here for the school. People are bringing families here. So, yes, maybe that's our most expensive expense, but when the school loses an art teacher and a music teacher and sports teams or whatever, that doesn't make it as attractive to those people that are thinking about moving here. So, as Mark said, the cascade effect. You cut the pool, and you cut the, and then all of a sudden people are like, well, actually, I'm going to move to Sitka because it's cooler than Haines. And then you don't gain any of that revenue that they would have brought with their $100,000 a year mining job. So it's really a tough equation to factor in where you tighten that belt.
Looking past just next year, Ernest says federal and state funding will likely continue to decline.
I can foresee a time not too far in the future where we will not have state revenue sharing.
It's happened before.
Yes, and I believe it will happen again. Because it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Because we're losing production through the Trans-Alaska Pipeline it's like, I don't know what the average is now. It used to be 10% per year. It's, I think it's less now. They were able to produce more out of what they have and bring more fields online, but it is trending down, and there is a trigger at some point where if the price of oil drops below a certain benchmark, that the agreement that was in place to fund revenue sharing changes or goes away, and it's only for a certain number of years. It's inevitable at some point in time the state, I believe, will not be able to continue to afford, or they will make the decision not to fund that program. Hopefully that's further down the road than I'm afraid of, but nonetheless I think that's the way it's going to happen. The federal government, as you know, is even in a worse predicament. Every year for the past few years, we've had one-year extensions of the federal programs that we rely on for general government operations, secure rural schools, and payment in lieu of taxes. We're seeing the significant reductions in those two programs right now. I believe there will be a time when federal government will either drastically reduce those programs or eliminate them altogether.
Yet Ernest says he's hopeful there is still time for the community to find those new and burgeoning and perhaps, like the mayor says, creative and self-sustaining sources of revenue.
I think we've got some time here to do some planning and to do some proactive effort to try to create economies or to encourage economies. This is all driven by the private sector, but the government has a role in trying to facilitate and trying to be supportive of those efforts that will provide for revenues long term. And I think that's our challenge right now.
That was our discussion recently with Haynesboro Manager Mark Ernest, Mayor Stephanie Scott, and Executive Assistant Darcy Kolbeck. Again, the Haynesboro budget for fiscal year 2014 is supposed to be available Monday. The Assembly has already scheduled meetings to discuss the budget. Those will take place throughout April and May. The budget must be adopted by the Assembly by June 15th. To see the meeting schedule, visit the borough website at haynesalaska.gov. And you're listening to Talk Around Town this morning on KHNS, Haynes, Skagway, and Cluckwan. I'm Margaret Friedenauer, your host this morning. And now we're here with our segment, My Name Is, but we're also talking a little bit about more than just that. I'm here with Jesse Morgan, the new Cultural and Education Coordinator at the Haynesboro Library. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, Margaret.
So tell us a little bit about first your position. You've been there how long in this new job?
In this new job, it's my second week, and I'm really excited to be at the library.
Yeah, in the do you enjoy the position and what you get to do in it and things?
I'm really excited to share knowledge and learn with other people of the community.
Great. And what kind of things? I know that there's always lots of activities going on in your department, so tell me about some of the things coming up.
Okay, so we have a big event coming up on April 8th. That's next Monday. And we're really excited to have the author Thomas Thornton present at this big event. He's a professor at Oxford University in England.
Oh, wow.
And we will be introducing a touchscreen interface map that displays the Tlingit place names of the region, not just Haynes, but also in the Yukon. So.
Oh, and the entire valley and all the, yeah, that's been an ongoing project, hasn't it? That's been in the works for a few?
Yeah, for a year or two now. They've been researching and actually utilizing Thomas Thornton's books because he's an expert on the local area, so.
And the author, yeah, that's the author that's coming from?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
How did you get him all the way from Oxford? That's pretty amazing.
It's kind of funny. Yolanta Ryan, who was in the position before me, just emailed him, kind of gave it a shot, wasn't really sure, and he responded. And so we kind of planned this event around him coming, and we're super excited to have him there.
Oh, great. And so are people going to be able to see the actual table this time?
Or yes.
It is a table, isn't it?
Yes.
It's kind of like a – can you explain it a little bit more? Because it's more than just an iPad from what I understand.
Yes, a little bit more. It's like a huge tablet, and it's touch screen, so you can zoom in on a Microsoft Map interface and touch on different areas in Haines and learn more about that specific area, the villages that used to be there, and the history. And you can actually hear our elder Joe Hotch pronouncing the names in Tlingit.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then I know there's some videos, too, that pop up and describe
yeah.
it.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Kutgwan okay. School helped a lot in documenting sort of historical aspects and traditional values of certain areas. And and then there's some web interaction that pops up with films from the Sea Alaska website.
Oh, Sea Alaska. Okay, that's great. And so what other kind of things are you excited about with your new job? Because I know it's new to you, but a lot of people in the community know about the programs that come through this program. So,
well, big shoes to fill. I'm really excited to plan different events of things that I specifically want to learn more about the rich culture that is centered around Haines, and sort of provide an opportunity for youth and other members of the community who want to learn more. I'm excited to just plan programs so that we all have that chance to just learn more.
Great. Well, Jessie Morgan, the new cultural and education coordinator?
Yes.
Okay, at the Haynesboro Library. I know that you get the word out pretty well about upcoming events, so we'll just keep our eye out for those. And
yes.
People can see you at the library, I'm sure, too.
Yes.
So, well, congratulations on your new job, and thanks for joining us.
Thank
and thanks
you.
For coming to talk to us today.
Thanks.
Okay, take care.
Talk Around Town is supported in part by Community Waste Solutions, offering comprehensive refuse services for the community of Haines, with curbside pickup to South Hall, composting to recycling, C&D disposal to septic and porta potty services. Community Waste Solutions at the end of FAA Road in Haines, open 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday.
Well, that's our show for today. Thanks for joining us for Talk Around Town today on KHNS. I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Thanks to our guests, Tom Morfitt, John Hagen, Jake Bell, and Jesse Morgan, our trifecta of different community program, different education programs within the Haines community, all talking about their programs and different things coming up. Thanks for joining us. Thanks also to Haynesboro Manager Mark Ernest, Mayor Stephanie Scott, and Darcy Kobach for our pre-recorded interview. And don't forget that budget process. Everybody gets to see the budget Monday for the Haynesboro, and a lot of discussion and meetings will come from that. The next edition of Talk Around Town with Deborah Schnabel will be right here on KHNS, April 11th. I did want to mention one other upcoming event. It's not till next weekend, but it's the Haines Health Fair 2013. And the theme is Hometown, Home Healthy. It's brought to you by Search and Public Health. There's going to be a multitude of resources for Haines Community Health at this fair. Blood testing, including vitamin D testing, diabetes and dental health, herbal healing and nutritional foods, disabilities, parenting and infant learning, houseplants and clean indoor air, alcohol and domestic violence awareness, recycling and keeping our community clean. And the best reason to go to this fair next weekend is to see Minnie the Mini Colon, a table-sized blown-up version of your colon. Learn about your colon and colon disease and colon cancer. That's next week, April 6th, Saturday, from 8 a.m. to 12. I believe it's at the Haines School. For more information, you can call Search Wise Women at 766-6366 or public health at 766-3300. Coming up next is World Cafe. Thanks again for joining us today for Talk Around Town. You're listening to KHNS, Haynes, Skagway, Kluckwan.